Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
Culture.
Competition.
Architecture.
The dirt.
Drinking.
Eating.
Reading.
Thinking.
God, I love the dirt.
Let's not waste any more time.
Let's go straight to the pod.
Thank you all for being here.
We greatly appreciate the support.
Welcome to the Tie Podcast.
I saw the Kingsley Club, played the Loop, played Crystal Downs, and then we went on a golf trip with the High Point guys and Tom Doak. We flew to Rock Creek Cattle Company for 3 days, then played Ballyneal, both with Doak. So that was ridiculous. Overall, like, there's so much more to golf than just, you know, what did you shoot or what tournaments are you playing in? And I think that that's just being completely ignored.
Hello, Tie family. Walker here. Today I am with Trey Wren, friend of the Tie Podcast, creative director at High Point Golf Club, and one hell of a stick. Trey was a collegiate golfer at Temple, who, after turning pro, shortly diverted to starting his media company, Sticks Golf, named after the folks who can play hard, have a well-rounded knowledge of the game, and are always curious about it. In this episode, we cover his background as a competitive player, the steps taken to begin his creative work, and what he's learned at High Point. As always, we're thankful for you being here to listen in. I know there's a ton of interest on High Point right now, and this should provide an inside look into the project and the people responsible for it. Cheers. Glad to be
long,
here.
Long time listener and now first time guest. Excited about it.
Yeah, it's sad that we're not in the same part of Florida, but plenty of Zoom calls, plenty of phone calls, but we're here today formally for a Tie Podcast interview, and glad to do it. It's long overdue. Before we get truly started today, let's hop right in the dirt. I know you've been spending a lot of time in the dirt this year up at High Point. More on that later. What have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking this year?
All right.
Well, this year, this week, however you want to take it.
I'll go this year. I've been drinking a lot of red wine starting out. I have a glass in my hand right now. It's some sort of Tuscan. I don't know what that means, but I've just been drinking a lot of red wine throughout the year, more so than normal. Tequila and red wine is pretty much all I drink, and water, of course. And then eating, I've been eating a lot of Mexican food while in Florida. And then I've been eating a lot of food on the road this year. That's kind of been my theme. I've been trying to find decent food no matter where I am. And that's can be hard to do. Reading the last book I read, I don't really read. I listen to books more than anything. The last one I listened to was Rick Rubin, A Creative Act, which is just a staple, but I haven't read
anything.
I haven't read anything outside of like the Golfer's Journal in maybe a month or two. So I need to change that. Maybe as December progresses, I can find another book to read. Open anyway.
You got no time. I mean, every time we talk,
I do not have time to read. That's why I listen. I listen in the car. It's like the only time I can, instead of a podcast, if I just throw on an audiobook. And the last one was Rick Rubin. And then thinking, the thinking one I was not prepared for. But on the fly, I've been thinking a lot about sort of next summer or this coming summer and what that's going to look like. I'll probably be up in Michigan a ton, working at High Point, playing High Point. I'm just so excited for just the super rare time that is like right before a course opens or the season before a course opens. And just that's the best 12 months in the whole process of starting a golf course. So that's what I've been thinking about a lot, just next summer and just want to teleport there, but enjoying the months down here in Florida, as you know.
Yeah, it's weird. I was thinking a lot about this week. It's felt like a dark, gloomy cloud as far as the golf world, particularly this December. We're recording here on the 13th.
Yep.
And it's weird. Like it does get a little slow this time of year. And I reflect back on what an awesome summer 2023 was. And there's so much happening in the golf world, in all areas, in all buckets of the golf world. And I look forward to that rush again next year as we get more and more involved in whether it's you at High Point or just trying to make it to more competitive events on the mid-am side, on the professional side. There's so much golf development happening. It seems like all of that just gets thrown into those summer months. And right now, it's strangely peaceful. It's strangely quiet. But I look forward to that again. So we're going to get into, obviously, High Point today. Into Sticks, I really want to know more about your creative process, what you guys are doing over at Sticks, what just what the deliverables are, what your initiatives are. But before that, I want to dig back and learn more about Trey Wrenn and what made you who you are today. I've asked this question before on the pod to a lot of guests, and I'll ask it to you today. What was the first version of golf that you knew? I mean, you've been playing this game a long time.
Wow. Okay.
What did golf look like the first time that you were introduced to it?
That's a good one. I would say it definitely came from my family. My dad has been a lifelong scratch the entire time I've been alive and before. And so he would always play, and I didn't really play a lot of golf until I was in like eighth grade or so. But before that, it would just be like occasionally going to the course with him, hitting some tee shots, etc. And then in high school, my grandmother, she was the founder of an LPGA tour event and ran a tournament for 20 years for the LPGA. So she was always around golf. I didn't really get to experience that. That ended before I was alive. But she decided she wanted to start playing. And then I was in early high school, just started playing golf every day and decided I wanted to play in college and kind of went from there.
So when you were like, let's say a high school player, what year did you start really taking it serious?
Like right before my freshman year of high school. So kind of definitely on the late side. Like I didn't play any junior golf tournaments until right before my freshman year of high school.
And was high school golf or like kind of working into a full competitive junior schedule?
Yeah.
What was more enjoyable for you early on?
I don't know. I had a good high school team. We had three of us go try and play college golf. And so we won two state titles. I won one individually. So high school golf was fun, but we knew it really didn't mean anything. So it was kind of just more for fun. And we had some success and that was great. But I don't know. I love junior golf. I wasn't like a good junior golfer by any means. I got good when I got to college, but I like junior golf. I didn't play a ton of AJGAs or anything like that. I just played like local stuff, state stuff. I played a lot of stuff, but nothing that was super nationally competitive at all.
So tell me about Temple. Why Temple? And curious, you know, there's some realities to playing golf in the Northeast. And I'm curious if any trips down south made you interested in living in Florida eventually.
Yeah. So Temple was interesting. I loved every bit of it. I was super late, like I said, to progressing and being a good enough player to play college golf. I was thinking about going to Methodist University in North Carolina, D3 powerhouse. Didn't love that. I did a gap year and then I was able to walk on the team technically at Temple. I just wanted to go to a big school and they had a huge budget. I liked the coach. I met him and it was an unbelievable experience. I got to play every single event, which made me so much better. That's super underrated. Kids will go to schools and, you know, they'll play eight times in 4 years. And I got to play 129 rounds of college golf. That was incredible for my game. But yeah, I just love the idea of a big school, and the city didn't really deter me. I thought it was cool. The only thing that really sucked is you had to drive like 45 minutes to an hour every day to practice in and out of the city, which was only like 10 miles away. So that was tough. But yeah, we'd always play in the South, which was helpful. We didn't really play in the Northeast too much. So that was cool. So yeah, I mean, I came down to Florida afterwards after I turned pro and have been down here ever since.
So what attracted you to pro golf, and when was that kind of in your mind? Was that high school? Was that a certain developmental year early in college?
Yeah, gosh, I did not think, if you'd asked me during my junior, even up to my junior year of college, I still did not think I was going to try and play pro golf. I went that summer, maybe my sophomore year, I thought maybe because I played pretty good. And then I played average my junior year. And I was like, I'm just going to get a job and live in Philly and join a nice club. And that was kind of the path I saw myself going down. And then right before my senior year, I went and caddied for a month for my friend Brandon Matthews, who was a teammate of mine, he just was on the PGA Tour last year. So I caddied for him for a month and I watched Korn Ferry Golf up close. And I was like, gosh, like they're not that much better than me. And then I had a really good senior year. And then I was like, gosh, I may as well just try. So I when I went into pro golf, I wasn't like, this is the only thing I'm ever going to do. Like, I'm going to just give this my, like, you know, I gave it my all, but I put a strict 2-year timeline. If I didn't have PGA America's Korn Ferry or better status, I was just going to stop playing because I just didn't want to be like a 35-year-old Korn Ferry Tour rookie. I just didn't think that was super appealing. So that's exactly what I did. I played for almost 2 years. COVID happened. I was going to go to China, which would have been sweet, but that got completely canceled off the face of the earth. And so then I got my amateur status back and started this media company, Styx. And that idea just kind of came from not really enjoying what was on golf YouTube. I still really don't, but we haven't really solved that. We just kind of dabbled in that at the beginning and then it went off in another direction, but that's kind of how I've ended up where I am now.
Yeah. Speaking of China, I was curious about your COVID story and kind of what the steps were to, just create Styx in your mind and then actually, make it happen.
Yeah. So like it started out as just me not enjoying like the Barstool Golf YouTube. I like No Laying Up. I like Eric Lang, but I didn't think they're very good players. And so for me, it got kind of boring. I just didn't think there was like a really good golf YouTube product that was not some version of tournament golf. And so that's kind of what me and two of my friends started out doing. We started making YouTube videos and they were decent, weren't getting really any views, but they were decently made. And then almost immediately we had a couple golf companies reach out and ask us to make stuff for them. And I just kind of made up prices and then took paid work. And that's really the direction it's gone in. Styx started out as this idea of like, you know, a really solid YouTube channel that's going to be completely different than like No Laying Up or Eric Lang or Barstool, but it's going to be like a really quality storytelling product. And that's kind of what I've been learning how to do through all this client work I've done, but it's sort of morphed into like a, where now I'm working for companies, players, courses. I have this job at High Point where I'm working on that full time. And I've just kind of had to follow like where the income is coming from, obviously, but I've advanced as a someone who's getting hired for their quality versus like a big following way more than I would have if I had just been still making original YouTube videos. So it's kind of gone in a couple of different directions, but trying to bring it back full circle.
So take me back
for sure.
I'm curious, you know, there is some skill and some experience required to put together videos of this quality. Like I highly recommend anybody listening to go spend some time on Styx YouTube and check out some of the college golf series y'all have done. And especially looking at how far you've come since shooting those projects, it's like the quality is really good. So how did you get there? Like, were you always proficient with a camera and a
no, man, like
video? Like, how did that start?
Completely from nothing. Like, I had never owned a camera when we started. I had never edited. I just started doing it like almost every single day. Like, it kind of relates back to like going back to like high school golf. Like, I was not very good, decided I wanted to play Division I college golf and just practiced every single day until I did that. And that's kind of the way I viewed like the camera stuff. Like, I know what I want the product to be for golf and in golf. And I know like my taste. Now I need to catch up and learn how to do the creative part. And I've always been a creative person, but I've never had like a vehicle to, you know, create stuff. And now that I've learned how to edit and shoot and take a good photograph, it's more become about like, what can I get myself in front of? Who can I work for, you know, to create what this eventual product that I want to make, which will be a, you know, a really cool action sports style travel film. Is that's really like the end all product that I'm working towards, where you take super talented people to a cool location and make a film about it. That's my favorite thing in other sports and want to just try and bring that to golf. But yeah, this has all been kind of the way working toward that, but doing kind of whatever's come at me in the meantime. That's kind of what you have to do when you're starting. I've just taken a ton of work and gotten decent at it pretty quick. And now I have this like body of work that I can get actual like decently high paying, you know, editing and shooting and producing jobs. So it's not what I expected in the beginning, but it's turned into something pretty cool.
So that leads us right into High Point, of course. And,
yeah.
And you've taken all of us through this, before in one of your reels, but just for the sake of the podcast, do you mind giving me the 1, 2, 3 chronological events of kind of how High Point got started as far as the most recent renovation, I guess, of the golf course?
Let me just tell you like the basic story of what High Point is.
That would be helpful, as well as, you know, how did it go from a golf course that had been overtaken by nature and partially owned by a hops farm to what we're currently working on today.
Sure. So backstory on High Point, it was Tom Doak's first golf course. You know all this, but Tom Doak's first golf course, he was 25 when he got hired, 26 when he built it. It was a public golf course in Traverse City, Michigan, where he lives. He's lived ever since he built it there. Excuse me. And he, it was ranked in the top 100 at one point. It ran as a public course for 20 years. It closed when the owner died, gave it to his son. He sold it during a recession in 2008. So it was the front nine bulldozed by a hops farm, the back nine not touched. So then it just sat there for since 2008, just exactly as it was when we found it. And the way that I got involved with it, the way that it's coming back, this guy that I work for, Rod Trump, he's an entrepreneur, angel investor guy, wanted to do a golf project. He tried to buy the Kingsley Club. So that's how this really all started. Was he was up in Traverse City living there for the summer of 2021. I believe, yeah, 2021, and he was trying to purchase the Kingsley Club, which ended up he got outbid by private equity Escalante, who bought the Kingsley Club. And so while he was up there, he heard about High Point, literally heard a fried egg podcast about High Point, and was like, wow, I should do this, and got Tom Doak's phone number, cold called him. Tom calls him back. They talk about it, and 2 weeks later, Rod had an agreement on the land, and off we go. So he had this vision for a world-class, high-end private club. And he kind of took that to Doak and was like, can we do that here? And Doak's like, absolutely, this place is incredible. And so that's kind of what we came up with. And so they decided not to restore by the hops. We were thinking about buying the hops farm. They decided not to do that. There was enough golf left over to do something really cool. And there was a big piece of land that was he had routed back in the day, unused. And they decided to build 12 new holes. Restore six holes as they were, the six best holes, which is pretty cool. But that's kind of where it started, and that's where we are now.
So how do you come into the picture at that
sure.
point?
Yeah, I was caddying at Pine Tree Golf Club as I'm getting my business off the ground, and I was making a film for the park in West Palm Beach, which I still haven't finished or released yet, but that's on the way.
We can't wait.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. It'll be worth the wait. It's a long timeline for that film, so it's just got to be patient. And so I was working on that, and then Rod was a donor for that, so he had seen some of my work on that, and he's like, "Hey, can you come up and film the first time that I walk the land with Doak?" So I went up, filmed that, made a video just for basically for Rod, and which those projects are the best. I'm just making a video for one person to see, but. So I went up and did that, and I just was sort of involved in a lot of, like, I was doing the content, and he just started having me involved in more of the creative decisions. My role is creative director. So I helped him develop the logo. I've curated a bunch of the merchandise so far. I've done all the content. I've helped us with our story and our sort of the way we look for the media. We've gotten a ton of media exposure, which has been awesome. And I basically spent 50 days up there on site this summer, watching and documenting all the construction and the course being built, and gosh, that was a perspective changing experience for me. Like just watching, I got to see the park, but they were pretty much like done with the construction stuff when I got involved. But man, High Point, I saw it like just Doak and Rod walking around. He's like, all right, this will be here. And then it, just watching it all come together is just, it's just fascinating. I know you've worked on a project. It's indescribable as a golfer. It really just changes your perspective on golf in general.
Totally. And this is actually timely because, you know, last week we were with Brad Gale, did that recording recently. Yep. You know, Brad living in South Florida, and his takes on the park were spot on. You know, both of you are really high level golfers, and it's like, it's amazing what you don't know. And also each golf course is like, you know, superintendents say this all the time, and that, you know, you might understand the inputs of your golf course, but you go across the street and it's a totally different work of art.
Yeah.
And it's the same with every golf course project. And I think, you know, I haven't talked to Tom Doak about this, but I'm sure he would say the same thing, and that it's a never ending, like you can't know it all. Every site is just so different.
It's like a puzzle with no solution. It's just every, exactly what you just said, like I got to see some really good golf in some really different places this year, and every single piece of land is unique, and it, like down to the dirt, like that, it's just, it's
down to
head
the
to
dirt.
Toe, down to the dirt. The place is just so different, and but their different pieces of land can create something that's so good in so many different ways. It's just what's so fun about exploring golf and just trying to see more and more, and there's no end to it.
So one thing that I'm obviously curious about, I've asked you probably something to the order of, 10,000 questions about media deliverables the nuts and bolts of what you do offline. But I'm sure everybody listening here has seen the content that you've been putting out at High Point and is also curious, what the deliverables look like and the conversation that goes into that. Like, how do you and Rod collaborate and agree on kind of a way to bring what is happening on a remote site in Traverse City, Michigan to the public? Because, I don't think many people know this. Like, do you have full creative control? I'm sure the answer is no. Sometimes Rod has to, lean on you in a very big way.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely.
Spending a large amount of time working on this stuff. And as I sit here and look at, you've taken before, 15 to 20 durings throughout construction, and then we'll eventually see afters, and there's plenty more to come as far as like long form content with High Point. What was the vision? What was the planning behind showing what is happening here to the public?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of what Rod wants to share and what I want to share as well. I mean, it goes both ways. Like, it's not like we have this extensive schedule of, I'm going to post this. And I mean, I have a timeline of I'm going to post stuff during this time and that time. But it started off, the original idea was I was going to make, I'm still doing this, but I was just going to make a long form film about rebuilding High Point. And again, like the reason that people have been captivated at all by this story is because of the story. It's not because my videos or because Rod's doing it. It's the story of Tom Doak getting to resurrect his first course ever. And it's literally his home course. He lives 10 minutes from there. So that is what's propelled anything, like any of the views, any of the media coverage is all because of that. So knowing that, we guess we've kind of leaned into that, obviously. But that's what it's all been around. We thought it was a compelling story. So I was originally hired to make a long film, which I'm still doing, about the project. And that sort of that initial deal led to me saying, hey, well, we should put this on social media and we should, and I've really just tried to lean into the architecture because it is a private club and there are a lot of people that are not super thrilled that they're probably not going to get to play it after they played it for 10 years. So that's something we've kind of had to dodge, but I've just really made it all about the story and the architecture. And that's because it really feels like a historic place in golf. Like those are some of the themes that we wanted to lean into, make it about Doak, make it about the architecture, make it about the fact that it's literally the first holes he ever built. And so that's kind of the creative direction. And honestly, I've had pretty much full creative control. Like there's not been anything I've posted where he said, take that down. A couple of times I've something I did that, which was hilarious, was I posted this early aerial of a certain hole that was put on Barstool because of the shape. That's all I'm going to say. It was a conspicuously shaped tilling job.
The whole kind of suspicious.
Yeah, we'll call it suspicious. You can go scroll and find that. But so that one, I might have wanted to run that by him. But no, I've had full creative control as far as that goes. Like it's all been sort of things I thought were cool and that I'd never seen anyone document. That's kind of been what's been behind what I've been sharing. But you said, the deliverables, I have so much footage of this place.
It's insane.
I've only shared a fraction of a percentage of what I've shot. So that's always how it goes. But I've shot High Point for, I think, let me just try and do the mental math, 25, some maybe 30 days this year, all day. 30 days. So I've got so much archival footage and I'm going to be able to make something really, really cool once it's all said and done. That's when it matters. Like I could make a short film about this summer, but unless you have the whole picture, it's going to be much more interesting if I just hold it and wait. And that's always a tough thing to do, but it's going to be cool once I finish it.
So there's the architecture side, but there's also the human side. Like one thing that's near impossible to see unless you're working on one of these sites is the humans involved not only the talent, but also just how different folks get along and understanding the roles
guys,
of
yeah.
each person to really get that job done and to make things even more complex. You're up north, you know, so there's a grassing window that shows up really early, and you've either got to expose dirt and get it done or you don't. And so what I've been hearing from you is that a lot of this stuff, these guys are crushing it. And so they're inclined to just like kind of get it done before the grassing window closes. What has it been like watching these guys rush to finish before seeding window closes?
Yeah, just into the course construction. They were working so hard. They worked like 10-hour days for 6 days a week the whole season, and maybe even longer than that. They were just grinding. But we had kind of an odd crew. Like Doak talks about it all the time. He's like, we don't have our normal. Usually, I have two associates, one lead. Like they have all these shapers on site, but it was just Doak, Slonik, and then our teams, which we have a couple of talented people, but. I don't know, the theme on like overall on site the whole summer was like these people are just so proud of it because they're all from that city. It's not like they're from Michigan. They all live in Traverse City. From Tom Doak, Brian Slonik, Dan Lucas, our head superintendent, Chris Danbrook, our golf superintendent, our assistant super, like everyone is from there, and they've been building courses, all of them, or they've worked at other courses, around the state, around the world. And so the fact that they're doing it in their hometown, it was just, there was no, like, yeah, like we were rushing and we had this kind of a tough deadline with the weather, but I mean, they just were, everyone was just there every day, just happy to be there, thrilled to be there. And we had so much like just passion, and that was kind of the theme of the whole summer. It was just, they were just stoked to be there and stoked to be doing it. And I was just as fired up to be documenting it.
That kind of tied a bow on it really nicely. I've been thinking about this a lot, especially since you shared a video recently. And it's like, it's easy to kind of skip over it, but I think 26, 25 taking a job, yeah. Regardless of like what magnitude it felt like or looked like in that moment, we're both of similar age, and it kind of just knocked me back on my seat and reminded me as I look at Doak's body of work. I mean,
yeah,
the age that we are and the age that he is, we've really gotten to like appreciate his full body of work. In the same way that I would if I had been born, 5 or 6 or 7 years earlier with Tiger. Like I kind of yeah. missed a little bit of that with him. And I'm not necessarily putting Doak and Tiger in the same realm there. But what I'm trying to say is it was like a reminder to me that, yes, you need to find what really interests you and what really lights your fire. But honestly, what's more important is just chipping off the block, just getting stuff done
started. Yeah.
Consistently. And you've been doing that. I've been watching you do this for at least a year. I know you've been doing it longer than this, but can you help take me through, kind of what the last year has been and how much it's sharpened you, but also towards what you really want to be doing long term?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the last basically 2 years, because like once we started the original channel, we did that for 6 months. We had some investment money and we just basically spent all of it making YouTube videos and learning how to make YouTube videos. And then basically about 2 years ago, last year, I was still caddying a little bit. And also I was caddying to make that feasible. Wasn't paying myself at all. And then once we got some paid work, I was like, well, maybe I can do more of this. And I put the original stuff to the side. So now this is the last 2 years almost straight. I've just been doing pretty much anything I can do in the world of golf with, taking photos, editing, shooting, and then creating ideas. So the work I've been doing has been, different stuff. Like I'll go spend a day with X tour player, and just get stuff for their social media and I get a day rate for that. Or I've gone and I've pitched entire like campaigns essentially to companies like Beadratty, and I get, a contract to go and work for them for 6 months on the college series where we're supposed to make four. We made three, long films, and they paid for it and they paid us to do it. And that was really cool. And then I've got a couple clients I work for on retainer where I'm doing creative direction and like with High Point, I'm doing all kinds of stuff there where it's like a consulting job. So it's kind of like we've gotten hired to do original stuff because people like it. Our sponsors like it. The companies we work for like it. And we've had we get hired to do stuff because of just the pure quality, and they just take it. Like I did a day with, this was insane. I did a day at Grove 23 with Gareth Bale, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, and Gary Woodland. And like, I just made a reel for Gareth Bale and Dustin Johnson's Instagram just purely because of like the guy I work for asked me to do it. And it's like, I've had a lot of things just kind of fall in my lap like that, where I've gotten to put ridiculous resume pieces on my, in front of my camera without having like, you know, this crazy good resume to do it. But I've worked for people in this area, like Jupiter, Florida is just the hub. So like I got a random call out of the blue a couple months ago to go spend 2 days just with these, like with Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay for back-to-back days at Medalist, just like shooting the guys hanging out just for Patrick's Instagram. So like stuff like that is just purely based on like me being in this place doing it right now. And like a lot of the stuff's falling in my lap because I'm a good golfer, and I just know people in golf like here where it matters. So that's been incredible to sharpen my skills, as you said, but I really want to get back to making original stuff. So now that I've kind of made a name for myself a little bit, don't have a huge following yet, but quality wise, I'm getting hired to work with all these people. Then I can realistically present them with, you know, cool ideas and stuff that I want to see made and just use them to get it made. That's kind of the
Tell me more about sticks. So you mentioned, and this is a key part. Like I agree with you and Noah Up and Eric Anderson, like everybody brings their different value, but it is frankly pretty cool. Like seeing somebody with a high golf IQ going out and documenting some of this stuff. It's a different lens. It just is.
Yeah,
so as far as original content goes, like I know it's hard to say, like to a certain degree, you are like laser focused on High Point and that will not change for probably another year.
Yeah.
But once that chapter closes, and I'm looking forward to that being a huge success, what's on the other side of that as far as original content?
That's a great question. I think, you know, you and I have talked a lot about this at length, but just on the air here, I think I want to make and document golf travel in a way that people haven't done. Like you've seen buddies trips, but we haven't seen, like what you said, high golf IQ buddies trips. I want my stuff to be fun, and I want it to just capture high level golfers going on incredible trips and going to really interesting and maybe private or just hard to get to places. I just want to model it after action sports films. That's what I just love. And that's my favorite kind of sports content in general is surf films, snowboard films, where they take a cast of super talented guys and girls and go on these incredible trips, whether it's super remote, super challenging, super just difficult for the average golfer, snowboarder, or surfer to do. And that I think is a product that no one's even touched. And I think that's kind of what we're going to do. I mean, and on top of that, we're going to make documentaries and just thoughtful things about things that we find interesting or cool or stories that need to be told in golf that are being missed. I want to stay away from competition as much as I can. I love competition. I love competing on my own. And we'll definitely do some stuff with tournaments and about tournaments. But I think that overall, like there's so much more to golf than just, you know, what did you shoot or what tournaments are you playing in? And I think that that's just being completely ignored. There's like comedy golf YouTube. There's like good, which is who knows what. And then obviously Eric Lang he's telling stories, but he doesn't do it from the same lens, like what you said, is that we would. So, you know, there's a lot of references, but we don't really know what it's going to be until we start making it, and we'll have to find out. That's what I want it to be. I want it to be high golf IQ, high production value, and hopefully entertaining. That's the idea.
I've loved the compact nature of this pod, and we won't keep anybody too long today. Plenty more to share in the future. Trey, I've got one more question before we head out today, and that is, Trey Wren at the end of 2023 sits down Trey Wren at the end of 2022. He has 1 minute to tell him about the year he's about to have. What in the world does that sound like?
I'm telling about the year I'm about to have.
Correct.
As far as like work or just anything.
Brother, you've done a lot of stuff.
I've done a lot of stuff this year.
Coming back
actually,
and forth.
I actually have home, it. I have my year end wrap up script for a reel I'm making. I'm going to just read
for everybody listening.
Let me just read that.
We'll get on the phone and like he'll either be on a plane on like in the golf course in the middle of the forest, just got out of the water surfing. Like it could be anything.
I do a lot of things.
And that's badass.
All right. I have this. This is all based on like what I've done with sticks this year. How about that? I'll just run through this. This would be about a minute because this is like a script for a reel that I'm making this week.
It's like a Mudball Monday. It doesn't have to be a minute.
All right. Well, here we go. So I'm not going to read the actual script, but all right. So January, I started off what I just talked about, Grove 23, Gareth Bale, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, Gary Woodland. That was a cool video. It still is the most viewed video on Dustin Johnson's Instagram. Love Flex. Then I went to in January, I went to Stream Song with a group from home. I shot Stream Song, which was cool. And then we did a Beachratty road trip to the Florida Keys. We took a boat out, hit golf balls from a boat to an island in the Florida Keys with my friends and Christian Hafer, who's also a friend. I don't know why I said it like that. But he was like, we were working with for Hafer on that shoot. In February, I shot interviews before the opening of the park with Seth Waugh, Dan Stanton, Dirk Ziff, the guys that did the park. March was ridiculous. I filmed a day with Brad Faxon. We did a full shoot with Wake Forest in Winston-Salem and then back at Floridian for a tournament. Went to Sage Valley. Can't talk about that. I shot Tiger Woods at the park, which was insane. Got some unbelievable photos of Tiger Woods. In April, I shot an interview with Jack Nicklaus. We did the opening of the park, and then I like just played a lot of golf at the park that month with my buddy Brad Gale. May, I went on a ridiculous family vacation to where we go, British Virgin Islands. We stayed on a boat, and then I started with High Point that same month. So that was an awesome month. My brother graduated high school. We went on this long trip, and then I started at High Point. So that was my first trip up there. Then I played some tournament golf in June, back to High Point. July, more High Point. I went to Philly, saw some great golf there, played some more amateur golf tournaments. August, I did my 2 days with Cantlay, Ricky, Xander Schauffele at Medalist. More High Point, interviewed Tom Doak, interviewed Don Placek. Then we went to the Tree Farm where we were together. We played the Ringer, won the Ringer, filmed with Zach Blair, Billy Dratty. And then from there, flew to Boston, played Hyannisport, Highland Links for another Dratty project. And then September back to High Point. Now this is where I saw all the good golf. This is my like 6 weeks was absurd when I went from Tree Farm to Hyannisport. So then I went back to High Point in September. I saw the Kingsley Club, played the Loop, played Crystal Downs. And then we went on a golf trip with the High Point guys and Tom Doak. We flew to Rock Creek Cattle Company for 3 days, then played Ballyneal, both with Doak. So that was ridiculous. And then the end out September, we went and saw the Creek. We went with Rod from High Point to play the Creek. And then I've been kind of chilling out since then. I've been in October. I just went to High Point for 7 days. And then November, December, I've just been in Florida pretty much. Well, I went snowboarding, but that's not a work trip. So
doesn't have to be a work trip.
That's my work for the year. Yeah. There we go.
I think 2022 Trey would have passed out. That's
I think I almost just passed out reading all that. Yeah, that's good. I don't know how I'm going to cram that into 90 seconds. I don't think I can. It might have to be a two-parter.
Hey, that was awesome. 2024 is going to be even more awesome.
No, it's going to be more High Point, but I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm so excited. Like I said at the very beginning, like preview play, man, it's a one of a kind. One, you know, 12-month period never happens again. Just so excited to watch that golf course get played next summer.
It's a special golf course. Historically, the work being done there looks genuinely really good.
Have to come see it.
As anybody would expect, I would love to come see it and look forward to it. Trey Wren, thanks for
Hi, brother.
Thanks for being here. Pleasure.